In the beginning, there was the creation of a small plastic case. In this case, there was an item called a DVD. When the DVD was placed inside the machine, the first movie was being watched. This allowed the Extra Features podcast
to begin. Welcome to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon, bringing back the intern.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm back.
There's the video.
Yay!
The image is working. There you go.
You know what's really weird when you're having a text conversation with somebody, guys, and out of the blue they just randomly tell you their old job, and you had no idea what it was, and you're like, WTF, tell me more. So what I'm hinting to is our personal friend here, Doug, had a really cool job he never decided to mention to us.
Yeah, basically all through, I guess it started in middle school, I worked at a video store straight through college. It was one of those video stores that rented adult videos as well, and I was underage at the time. I was only 16, so I had to get my parents' permission. My first day on the job, I had to alphabetize all the gay porn videos. My favorite title, by the way, was Dick of Doom. Very generic box, but I loved the title. But yeah, I worked at a video store probably for over a decade, and just taking home 2-3 movies a night, watching them, staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning, returning them, doing it all again the next day. That was my life for like 10 years.
Sorry, were those regular movies you were taking home, or were you taking home the porn movies?
Did you take home Dick of Doom is what we're all asking here.
No, I did not take home that one, but I did take home many, many movies of all varieties.
No, but we want to know more about Dick of Doom, actually. You can't just drop Dick of Doom. And so how many times do people rent Dick of Doom?
Honestly, none. Oh. But one of the times I had a person ask if we had any videos about spanking.
Oh.
And I said, do you mean like discipline for like a child? He said, no. I said, oh. We don't really have a database that covers specifics, but everything is alphabetized in the back if you want to look under S.
So what was the most popular movie that you can remember while you were there?
Oh, geez. The one I remember distinctly was the James Bond movie, The World Is Not Enough, because it was abbreviated TWINE. TWINE, so we would have that reserved all the time when it came out, and we'd have the list of people reserving it. We'd have to call them when it comes in, and I just distinctly remember TWINE.
So how much would you have did you have to rewind them before you returned them back down, the VHS tapes?
Or you were supposed to, but I would say about maybe 80% of the people actually did, and 20% didn't.
What was the Tuesday special?
I don't remember if it was it was Thursday in my store. You rent one at full price, get a second for a penny.
Oh, well, that's pretty reasonable.
I'm just realizing this is VHS porn. I didn't click to that at first. That's funny.
So when looking back on these days, did you get to keep anything from here when you left, or is it still in, did it close down while you were there?
It was in the process of closing down when I left, but I have posters from movies that I had in my college dorm and my college apartment. I probably have some screener VHSs somewhere in my basement. I remember the big one was the Batman Beyond Return of the Joker movie, because we got the screener before it was edited to take out all the violence and stuff. So we had the original cut of that, and that was like the holy grail being passed around between all the people working there.
Oh, for sure it was, because a friend of mine had a copy because he was a reviewer. So he loaned it to him, like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then they finally brought it out years later. So,
yes.
How do you guys feel about everything getting delayed? Like, I'm getting a little annoyed. There's not really much to watch in the theater.
I wouldn't go anyway right now. Like, I was comfortable going maybe a weekend ago, but I didn't. But, like, now with the COVID cases, even in Ontario, rising, I'm just like, not yet.
Mm.
That's where I am at. I don't know.
Well, I've been dragging my feet and going to see Tenet for pretty much the same reason. The numbers are going up again, so I'm like, do I really want to make that pilgrimage? I'm a little miffed because there's some great movies that I want to see that are now delayed till Christmas or next spring, like Wonder Woman and Black Widow. And then Marvel's completely changed their whole release schedule for the next year and a half. So we're going to get a lot of Marvel movies next year at least, but hopefully the pandemic will be calmer, but we'll see.
But we did get the trailer for, is it WandaVision? Do I have the right name of the show?
Yeah, but that's on Disney Plus, right?
Dude, I watched the trailer for the first time in like 20 years with no sound.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want to ruin myself. But I figured because it's TV, I was allowed to watch it. So I turned down the sound.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe you can help me. Did I miss anything in the trailer I needed to know?
Well, what did you glean from the trailer?
I have no idea. It looked like Bewitched.
So for some reason, Wanda and the Vision are in some kind of TV reality.
Oh,
where they're a married couple in the suburbs. And they start out with kind of a Mary Tyler Moore setup, and then they seem to transition out west as things glitch to, like, more modern shows like Brady Bunch and Bewitched and Roseanne, shows like that, Family Ties.
Well,
but the curiosity is who knows what's going on, right? Because Vision is dead. And last time we saw Wanda, she was at the funeral for Tony Stark. So how did she end up in a TV show? Right? And there's a number of people clearly trying to break into that reality outside, including a new character, well, at least an older character who's now older, Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
So she's the daughter from Captain Marvel, who's now an adult, and she works for S.W.O.R.D., which is that organization that's set up outside of whatever that reality is that Wanda's created.
Okay. So, well, the last thing we're gonna, before we start the show is I just want to tell you guys I'm doing a Love Boat watch. I finished season one, and I have a little bit of points to pass on.
Mm-hmm.
I've decided Michelle Lee cannot act her way out of anything. She is terrible. Absolutely beyond bad. And Donna Mills has nothing else to do because she's on the boat twice too. And it's amazing how good an actor Leslie Nielsen is with these terrible plots. He actually comes out on top every time looking good.
Nice.
So, and that's about it. And they like to sleep around a lot in the Love Boat, I've noticed. And that's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Lots of Charo and lots of Rich Little, right?
Who? I haven't. No, Charo's only been on once and no Rich Little yet.
Oh, okay.
So maybe he'll be it's 10 seasons for me to watch, so I'm on season 2 now.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
So, I guess I felt like a group of new people every time the show starts. Like, they could be mutants or something.
New mutants, even.
Maybe.
Directed by Josh Boone. Starring Maisie Williams, Anya Taylor-Joy, Charlie Heaton, Alice Braga, Blue Hunt, and Henry Sega.
The great Henry Sega. Who did he play? Cannonball?
Sorry?
I guess so.
I have no idea.
Josh Boone was Cannonball.
I have no idea. You know what? Kevin, you're the big comic guy. I think this is your film to start with.
This isn't my film. So, Daniel, you didn't see it. Is that why you're tuning out?
Sorry, yeah, I didn't see this one.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just going to mute real quick.
He discovered there was an all-you-can-eat chicken ball fest down the street, and they would deliver to his house. As long as he ate them on the spot, they just kept coming and coming and coming. So he ate about 250, then passed out in his front hallway and missed his viewing done.
Who's this?
That's a good idea.
No, that was Daniel.
Oh, Daniel, okay. Okay. I don't know. Follow that. I hope you're okay, Daniel. I hope you were able to digest that, all the chicken balls. But anyway, New Mutants. What can I say? I mean, this movie was finished years ago. It's supposed to be the. It was supposed to be part of a new series of films spinning out of the Fox X-Men universe. And obviously with Fox being sold to Marvel Studios, Disney didn't quite know what to do with this. So they focused on getting Dark Phoenix out and getting that wrapped up. And this movie was kind of, it was announced and then it was delayed and there were rumors of reshoots and changes, new directions. And in the end, from what I understand, the movie is pretty much the way it was turned in. So wow. Not a lot of changes after that. So they cut an end credit sequence, which would have sort of hinted at a follow-up film in the direction where it was going to go. But I mean, this is – it's very low – not low budget, but like a small cast, much more intimate. Reminded me a lot of Breakfast Club. So taking five teens from different backgrounds and throwing them into like a remote school slash hospital where they're being overseen by their headmistress, who's also a doctor, who's overseeing their mutant abilities and making sure they don't do themselves any harm or harming the others. So I thought it was all right. I thought it was a good mix of kids. As a person who read New Mutants, I thought they did a great job with casting. I thought each of the actors really embodied the spirit of the characters from those comic books. The film itself isn't exactly riveting. It's not the most interesting film, but I thought for what it was, and the fact that it was the first movie I had seen since March, I enjoyed it. I thought it was all right. I didn't have any major complaints. I was just happy to go to a movie and see a superhero film. And, I thought there was a lot of potential, and I particularly liked Anna Taylor-Joy as Magic.
Okay, let's start exactly there. Anna Taylor-Joy, love her and everything. She's a great actress. Definitely has potential for the future. This is a strange film. I found at times when they're discussing, they don't really use her abilities a lot. Like Maisie Williams is wandering around in the dark half the time, checking on people. Uh-huh. I thought that was a little weird. I thought the psychiatrist, I'm like, what is going on? Like, she keeps talking to them, telling them to do things. I just felt they wanted more power usage or maybe an actual villain besides the shrink or the doctor. I thought that was a little weak.
Well, the fun part of it was that one of their own was the villain.
Yes.
Right? And it became very apparent as the movie went on. And it was her power set which was causing all of the problems.
Yeah, well, it was the bear lady, right?
It was Danny Moonstar and her ability to draw out people's nightmares, yeah.
Yeah. So I just was sitting there, I'm like, I get this, but I don't care. It was okay. But I wanted them to do something of interest. Fight somebody. Fight themselves. Fight some minions. Go into Ileana's dark universe. Give me something to do. I mean, it's great they're doing the Breakfast Club, but I've seen the Breakfast Club. Let's do something with these characters. I think there was a potential to do more than what we saw, but I don't think it was ever fully realized. I do think they had a good idea. They just didn't do anything with it.
I think if they'd gone back and done the reshoots and the pickups that they were going to, maybe we might have gotten more to it, and they might have seen that the film was very light. And I think that, unfortunately, Disney just didn't know what to do with it, and they figured, let's just throw it out there and get it out. That way it's done. People can see it. They were contractually obliged to do a small theatrical release. So they'll put it out there. It'll go on video on demand for a couple of months, go on Hulu, and then end up on Disney Plus, I'm sure.
Can't wait.
And that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, you're never going to hear me say this again, but I wish this movie was actually half an hour to 45 minutes longer.
I agree. I needed more.
I wanted more with other characters. Like,
yes.
Rain was not fleshed out at all. Cannonball wasn't fleshed out.
Nope.
Sunspot wasn't fleshed. The only two were Danny and Magic. I felt those were the only two characters that you got to know really much about. Mm-hmm. You got hints at Sunspot, but not a lot. I actually wanted more with those characters.
Mm. Yeah, I can't argue with you there. Yeah.
And like Simon said, I wanted to see everybody use their powers more. Mm-hmm. I think we got to see Cannonball fly, what, twice? Yeah. Once when he was tethered and once down a hall?
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Even the big fight sequence with the demon bear, they use their abilities, but they don't... What's with the sign there? Mm-hmm. Intern?
Intern.
Okay. Is he a new mutant?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's what happened to him since he left the show. I think he's been working there.
I thought he was the demon bear.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I also heard he got a job in Ottawa delivering chicken balls to all-you-can-eat people.
Rather chicken.
Yeah. It was better than the job beating a dead horse.
It's true.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of dead horses in China, from what I understand.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Yes, Mulan would know all about that. Directed by Nicky Garrow, starring Yi-Fi Lu, Johnny Yen, Li Dong, Jet Li, Jason Scott Lee, and Yosin Ann. There's a lot of Lees in this one.
I wonder why. Douglas?
Don't know what.
All right. I'm going to make a confession here. I have never seen the animated version of Mulan.
You missed nothing. It doesn't matter anyway.
So this was my first real kind of exposure to this story. So I didn't have the connection to Mushu, the Eddie Murphy character from the animated film, that my son was missing. My son was like, if there's no Mushu, what's the point? I enjoyed this movie. It was kind of a starter film to introduce younger kids to epic ancient warfare movies or martial arts films. I enjoyed it for what it was. I wasn't expecting it to be the greatest film ever made, but I enjoyed it. I knew the basic story going in, and I thought some of the battle scenes were pretty impressive.
That's it? Nothing else?
For now.
Okay, well,
I'll see what you guys have to say.
I had lots to say. I thought it was really good. I liked the scenery. I thought it looked really nice. I did like the look of the costuming. I liked the fight scenes. They were well choreographed. And stuff like that I quite enjoyed about the film. Storyline really didn't do much for me. I thought it was pretty basic. I mean, you're going on about the cartoon. I never liked this cartoon. So for me, I don't remember any of the cartoon. So maybe I was too old when I watched it. I don't remember anything. I thought the lead character did a good job. But from what people were telling me, because I had to ask, that Chinese people don't like this film because it's not Chinese. They said it's very North American view of the film. So I coming in afterwards hearing that, I went, okay. But because my friend would ask me, did you like it? I said, man, it's okay. He goes, yeah, I hated it. Mm. So for me, it was just a basic fight scene. I really felt it was lacking depth. It looked nice, but had no less feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I thought it looked great. So no complaints there. I do remember the cartoon, and I believe that there was a major change to the story structure that bothered me quite a bit in this version, and that was that the story of Mulan is that she's a young girl who takes her father's place, as you know, and goes and fights in his place as a boy. And eventually she's revealed to be a woman, but she stands up and uses her – she's still as good as a warrior as the others. But one thing that they added to this story, which was not in the other versions, was that Mulan had some kind of magical chi ability, mm-hmm. or ki ability, that allowed her to be an amazing horseback rider and acrobat and all this stuff. So essentially she was a superhero who was hiding her powers to become a girl.
Yep.
A normal girl. And so by joining the army, she was basically, she was a superhero in hiding, and at the first opportunity, she was able to come out and show her magical abilities. And we had to add the new girl power woman sorceress that came forward that was like, I don't get her motivations at all. I understand she sees something in Mulan and wants to help her, but she keeps trying to encourage her to break free and be this great sorceress. And eventually sacrifices herself against her own plan, which seemed completely out of character. That really bothered me quite a bit. Other than that, you know, the acting was okay. The major complaints were that it was white-written, white-directed, white-produced. They just hired people to fill the roles, and it didn't connect at all in China. The numbers have been dismal. That was part of the reason why they wanted to do this movie was they thought they would get big box office there, but it was. I watched it. I didn't want to see it, and I wouldn't have bought it. And then my sister-in-law bought it, and I watched it with the kids, and the kids liked it for what it was. It was okay. No complaints. I did miss Mushu, but he would have been completely out of place. Instead, there's a CG-generated Phoenix thing that just flies around like a kite for no particular reason. At different scenes, but other than that, I thought the cinematography was very good. You know, we got to see a lot of that province where the human rights violations are really out of control. So that was, you know, smart for them. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know if I'd recommend the film. I'm thinking if it's free and you have Disney Plus, then watch it and make up your own mind. That's what I would say.
Before you go on, remember the Phoenix from Conan the Adventurer, the cartoon?
Yeah.
It's on Conan Shield. Now I know where he got another job. He got it at Mulan. I haven't seen that guy in years. I was always wondering if he was sitting at home.
Well, it's good to know the unemployed mythical creatures get recycled. So what do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, my thoughts will echo pretty much everybody's. I enjoyed it, though. I can't remember movies that I watched when I was a kid, so I don't really remember that much of the original, even though I grew up on it. Like, I remember Mushu, but I was able to get, like, emotionally detached to that, and that's how I try to view these live-action remakes. Like, I thought it was way better than Dumbo. I thought it was way better than The Lion King, because I think the costume design and the production design, like, lends itself so well to the story. And, yeah, the martial arts were awesome. I don't know if I got... Now that you mention it, it makes a lot of sense that it was superhero, but I just thought that was, like, going into the spiritual aspect of it. But, yeah, now that you mention it, it's very much superhero, but I guess I didn't get that sense as much when I was watching it.
Well, it's like the implication was that she was special before.
Sure.
And then instead of being an extraordinary, like, a good person that excels and you know, shines outside of her box, basically.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And that kind of made it look like Assassin's Creed at time, when she's just jumping all over the buildings, chasing the witch hawk. But no, I enjoyed it. I don't think I'd watch it again. I thought Donnie Yen was great. Didn't really recognize Jet Li until the second half as the Emperor. And then I was like, oh, that's Jet Li. Cause he didn't sound like Jet Li. It sounded like his voice was dubbed over.
Could have been.
I don't know.
I was shocked to see Jason Scott Lee. That guy, I haven't seen him since The Dragon.
That's probably the last time he worked.
Yeah.
I think it's just one of those films that Disney's running out of ideas, I guess. So, I mean, they're making movies that are rides now and taking their old stuff and making live action. I'm like, did anybody clamor for any of this junk?
No. Well, I think they had some success with Beauty and the Beast and Lion King. So they thought, what other anime? What's that?
They must have made money with Aladdin to do this.
Yeah. And they thought, what other? I'm sure they've got others in the pipeline.
Oh, there are more.
Like, don't be shocked if Little Mermaid becomes a live action film soon or something. So.
Yeah, aren't they making that one?
Yes.
For the record, I really liked the live action Beauty and the Beast. I thought that was good.
I enjoyed it. It was okay. I hated The Lion King.
Oh, me too. And Dumbo and Lady and the Tramp. God damn it.
We never did Lady and the Tramp. I think that was a TV one, wasn't it?
No, that was Disney Plus original, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
So TV.
I think never the last good one I saw was Jungle Book.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I love the Jungle Book.
Yeah, because these people love the movie. He did not enjoy the film.
Okay. So are we thinking of ending things on Mulan?
Yes, I think we are.
Okay, I'm thinking of ending things. Directed by Charlie Kaufman, starring Jesse Buckley, Jesse Plemons, Tony Collette, David Thewlis, Guy Boyd, Adley Robinson.
Oh, can I start this? Because I really need some help.
Sure.
So I'm watching this film, and I'm not a big Jesse Plemons fan. I'm going to say this right now. I think he's good in small doses, but I can't take him in a whole film. So as this film goes on, it's moving in the car, and I'm starting to figure it out. I'm like, okay, I'm really enjoying Jesse Buckley. Absolutely loved Wild Rose for her. I still think her star's rising in here. I get the house situation. I'm kind of like, what the is going on in the house? I thought somebody was getting axed at some point during this film. I don't know who was getting axed, but I was waiting for somebody to get Tony Collette's pulling an axe, David Thewlis. Somebody was getting axed. Then I'm like, what is the title? Maybe I should focus more on the title. I'm thinking of ending things. So then I figured out it was probably Jesse Buckley ending the relationship on the drive back in the snow. So we're in the driving back, and I'm sitting there, it's snowing. I'm like, are we getting another? Can I check? Because you know me, I watch half and half, so I know I have another hour and a half left. We're in the snow, and they're talking. I'm like, okay, Jesse Buckley's doing a great job with this, just mountains of dialogue. Fantastic. Plemons kind of mumbles a bit. Then they stop for ice cream because he needs something, so he buys this giant ice cream. I'm like, okay, and all these beautiful women are at the ice cream shop, and they don't look cold, and I'm like, okay, now I'm just getting confused. Maybe it's going to go somewhere from here. So we get the giant ice cream. Then he starts complaining about he's got to throw it out. I'm like, this is getting weirder. And then they go, oh, my school's nearby? So we get to the school, and I'm kind of on board through this part. I'm still trying to be on board. And then somebody's got to explain to me what happened at the school. I just got confused. He throws it out into this dumpster with 300,000 cups of this stupid sundae. What's-her-face goes for a dance with the janitor, which I'm presuming is Jesse Plemons 30 years from now or whatever. Or am I totally wrong? So can somebody help me what I'm missing? I got two-thirds of a movie here. I'm convinced I understood two-thirds. Can someone explain to me the last third? And is she trying to end the relationship with the car? Or did somebody kill her after she got out of the car? I am so confused.
I can't explain it, but I'm just going to say that the most unrealistic thing about this film is the fact that they're able to get two large blizzards for $8.
Yeah, okay, but I just, can you explain the end to me? Somebody!
Well, I think my question is, who is the main character of the story? Whose story is it?
It's Jesse Buckley's story.
I would argue that it's actually Jesse Plemons' story because we see him full circle. He is the janitor.
Yeah. So I am right.
So the opening, we see him young and him old. They're both looking out the window at her in the beginning. Like, you see the old him looking out the window, and then the next time it goes back, it's young Jesse Plemons looking out the window. Honestly, I think this movie was just Charlie Kaufman kind of outsmarting himself. I would like to see a different director handle this script.
So hold on. What is that dance sequence then?
Isn't that Oklahoma?
Yes. I know the song is from Oklahoma. Okay. Why is it here?
All right, so the movie is about the janitor.
It is. That's
he's
why
he's old. and he's okay. He's got dementia, or he's not doing well. Something's wrong with him, and he is imagining things.
Okay.
So the whole movie is like a fever vision of his.
So where does the 300 cups of sundae come from?
Well, so he remembers, like, so when he goes, when she goes to the Blizzard place or whatever it is, the Dairy Queen, and the young girl, it's her. The young girl is her talking to herself, saying, like, don't talk to me or whatever it is there in the back. Like, for whatever reason, it's just his memories are all filling in on themselves.
So he's trying to remember. That's why he couldn't remember. Sorry, so that's why he couldn't remember her name? That's why she's Louisa, that's why she's Lucy, that's why she's Yvonne? Okay.
She's like a string of maybe failed relationships that he had, and he's trying to remember, like, he was alone for almost his entire life, and he's kind of creepy, he hangs around the school, he watches the girls in the play, so the school is actually putting on Oklahoma, and he watches some of the rehearsals of that with the students, and that reminds him of this, whatever this girl is, I can't remember the actress's name, but
Jessie Buckley.
So he remembers that, and then the whole thing where she starts narrating, but he can hear her thoughts because it's his memories. It's not her point of view. We're sort of like Kaufman is playing with us. He's trying to show us what she might be thinking, but he can hear it because it's his memories. So when she says, I'm thinking of ending things and all that stuff, and he just answers her directly in the conversations. And he ends up at the end basically naked in the snow in his pickup car. And I think that's where – I think he's basically dying. And I think the final sequence is a fever dream as he remembers singing Oklahoma in the gym and all of his family and friends are there. And maybe he's in purgatory or he's dying and he's – they're coming to see him or, I don't know, welcoming him or something. But it just didn't seem like it's all Charlie Kaufman fucked up mind stuff. But basically, I got the impression that it was his story as he was dying. He's suffering from dementia. So almost like a fever dream.
And that would also explain why her personality changes so drastically from conversation to conversation because it's not one person. It's an amalgamation of different loves that he had throughout his life or friends or whatever.
And his parents. His parents go through every stage of aging. So he remembers them young. He remembers them old. He remembers them dying. He remembers them vibrant. He remembers them when they were younger. Like, it's all different points of their lives and his memories. They're all kind of jumbled together. And so there's no, again, it's that fever dream quality. You know, one's young, one's old, one's in the bed, the other's upstairs. You know, he remembers how sad, like, as things trigger memories of what his parents were like. Like, I remember when my father had Alzheimer's and we had to do all this stuff.
So, did you look this up or is this your personal opinion?
This is my personal opinion.
Well, I'm good because you just explained this to me. Now I understand it.
Yeah, right.
Because I was so confused by the end of this. I'm like, I'm missing something.
I got the sense as soon as he was watching the movie, there was a movie within the movie of the girl. And so, and then people started quoting lines back from those sequences as dialogue, and that it's his memories. He's remembering things, but he's misremembering things. He's now remembering dialogue from movies that were in the background as he was working.
Okay, then this film makes sense to me now.
Well, the film doesn't make sense. There's no...
Well, no, I get it now, but I get where you're coming from. I can put the film together in pieces and say, yeah, okay, I understand.
How did you get all that from this piece of shit?
Oh, I disagree.
Because it was so bizarre, I was paying attention. A lot of crappy movies, you just kind of let them play on in the background while you play games on your phone or whatever. This movie, I was like, I have no idea what the hell's going on, but let me try to figure it out as it's going. And just the way that it played with time and dialogue and so forth. And then this side story of the old man, sometimes he's looking out the window, sometimes he's working at the school, sometimes he's, you know, remembering different things. And then as soon as they got to the school, like, it all focuses back on the school, which is where he worked and he lived. Spent almost his entire life associated with that school building in some way, right? That was probably his favorite part of his life was being a student there, and then the fact that he just ended up being a janitor there and ignored. He just, sure. You know, anyway, it was just one of those things. I mean, I'd be curious to actually see if there's anything out there that actually details what it's supposed to be to see how right I am. But that would be my, again, I'm just going by my read of the film.
It sounds right to me. I couldn't create any opinion on this. I just thought it was pretentious. I thought it was boring. I liked some of it. I liked the atmosphere. I loved the performances. I thought, it's not horror, but I thought some of it was very creepy, like when she recites the poem, just looking right in the out the window, right at the camera. I was like, can you stop? And then I learned that she, that criticism of that film that they talk about, that's like directly from some critic essay about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it too. I just, like, she started quoting back stuff, which is just articles that he remembered reading, is the way I took it. You know, he'd read articles about the films, or maybe he was reading it in the newspaper in front of him, and it would just end up being, like, just memories of articles read as opposed to people telling him stuff. So, and she also, her career kept changing too, right?
Yeah, the poet, painter, physicist, or psychist.
And then the paintings in the basement were his, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ones that were on her phone were his paintings.
Correct.
All right, so in our again, I don't know why my picture's not showing up, but I went and found a website that explains what happened.
Great.
Okay, so the biggest hint about what exactly is going on in both the book and the film comes in the title, "I'm Thinking of Ending Things," a phrase repeated by the female narrator of the book and the film's central character played by Jesse Buckley. We take it to mean that she's thinking of breaking up with her new boyfriend, Jake, while they're on the way to meet his parents. But this phrase can also mean, "I'm thinking of committing suicide," and by the end of the book, it becomes clear that that is the truer meaning of the title of the book. Everything we see with Jake, his parents, and the unnamed woman who is taking place inside the head of the old, is taking place inside the head of an older man, a high school janitor, who is contemplating taking his life. Jake is an idealized version of his younger self, and the woman is a fantastical version of a person that he met a long time ago. Jake, the custodian, appears to suffer from some mental health issues exacerbated by a lifetime of extreme loneliness. He spends the novel and the film daydreaming a scenario that maybe could have changed his life and set him down a happier path. It isn't very obvious that this is the case in the film, but the narration, which ends up being the final piece, is taking place inside the woman's head and the first person. Like, it changes back and forth between her and the first-person narrator. It changes from I to we. He says, it's Jake. It was Jake. We're in here together, all of us, and the girl. She, he, we, and me. There are clues that this was coming throughout the book and the film, if you look, know what to look for, including the moment when the woman sees a photo of Jake as a kid and says it looks just like her. That was one of the clues, too, right? She says, oh, who's that kid? Well, that was me. She says, no, that was me. So it's like there was no sense of identity. It was all one person's point of view. But, you know, anyway, interesting.
Sure.
I don't know if he really successfully pulls it off.
Well, maybe the film needed an upgrade.
Probably did.
Sure. Did everyone get to talk about the movie? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. Directed by Lee Whannell, starring Logan Marshall Green, Melanie Vallejo, Harrison Gilbertson, Benedict Hardy, and Betty Gabriel. Oh, and this is The Vault, by the way.
So, I guess I'll start an upgrade. This is the kind of movie when I was like 13 to 15 I loved. Basic story, lots of killing. And then we know who's going to win at the end. Now I'm older, I need a little bit more depth, but I still liked it. I think this film had such potential at times. Really enjoyed parts of it. I liked the concept. I liked the look of it. I love the world. I really would like a sequel to this in some way. I thought it made a lot of sense at times. It's very linear, obviously. It's a revenge plot. There's really no more to it than that. I really liked the lead actor. I thought he was excellent. The cop was kind of weak, but she had to be there. I get that. I think this is just a quality B film that would really be good at like a drive-in or a double bill with RoboCop. I just think this is solid, fun watch.
Yeah. I can go. Yeah, no, I agree. I've been meaning to watch this for a while. That's why I picked it. I love high concept thrillers, action, sci-fi. I love the world and technology, and I think it's like interesting that he's like technophobe and he gets saved by technology, and then he gets really screwed over by technology. And I love the plot as a brutal revenge story. I love Lee Winnell as a director. He's done Insidious Chapter 3, this one, and then The Invisible Man. And you can definitely tell his style with, like, the angle when Stem first takes over him over and he, like, goes up. And then, like, that's, like, the same style in mental asylum scene in The Invisible Man. And I just love that style of action. I think I can agree that a little bit more depth in the story would have been nice, but it's so solid all around.
Well, it's definitely a super solid. It's a super solid B film. I mean, I remember this came out the same year as Venom, and similar story about a guy not really in control of his body, but had a fraction of the budget that Venom had. And I think this movie pulled off a lot more inventive uses of action and story and everything. I would place this higher than Venom on my action scale.
Sure.
I agree. I think Venom's the better love story. Between a man and his symbiote.
Yes.
This movie reminded me a lot of that character Deathlok. Is a Marvel character who's basically a soldier that's fused with an artificial intelligence, and most of his body is been changed, and he's a cyborg. So there are times when he allows the AI to take over, and obviously when the AI takes over, I mean the guy's a soldier in the first place, so he knows what he's doing, but when the AI takes over, he's like a lethal weapon. He's just unstoppable.
No, he was solid. He fought that other guy that had upgrade abilities too. And that guy stopped him.
But there were a few cyborg type characters, but this reminded me of that.
I think this world should have a little bit more depth though. I mean, it was like I said, it was a little too basic going from villain to villain to villain. I just think there could have been more to this.
Remember when I kind of defended Bloodshot? This is the same, very similar movie. I take it back in my defense of Bloodshot after seeing this one.
Yeah.
Because it just does it so much better.
Intern says so.
Yes. And for those on the audio, Intern is here in spirit.
He is.
I feel like he's staring at me right now.
So, Daniel, do you consider yourself a nocturnal animal?
Nocturnal Animals, directed by Tom Ford, starring Amy Adams, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Shannon, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Isla Fisher, Ellie Bamber, and Armie Hammer.
So
now, Simon, I think you've seen this twice.
You watch this twice, because I saw when it first came out, and we never did it on Extra Features, and I couldn't remember. You asked me, and I said no, so if we've done it on the old episode, my bad. Again, I still have exactly the same problems I did with it when I saw it years ago. I think this film looks beautiful. Tom Ford is a designer, and you can see that in all his set pieces. People are dressed perfectly for their parts. Amy Adams, like that whole art gallery scene, is wonderful. I think even down to the eyeglasses and the glassware and the cutlery, everything is picture perfect. I have a lot of problems with the transition scenes when they transition into the book. I find we're just dropped in for highlights. So this is the highlight you're going to get here. We're going to get to see everything you need. And then we're going to come back in a little while because Amy Adams goes, oh, I can't read anymore. Oh, I have to get my dinner party ready. And then we come back for the next highlight. My problem is I didn't like Amy Adams' world in any way. I'd rather stayed with the Michael Shannon character and stayed in this world. Because Michael Shannon and Jake Gyllenhaal are amazing in this film. They act well together. This Amy Adams just feels like she's plunked in here. So we need somebody like a caretaker, a provider to walk us through stuff, which I don't think is needed. I think if we beefed up the other part and maybe had him, Amy Adams receiving a book from him and staying in the world at the beginning and maybe going back to Amy Adams at the end, the film would have worked for me a little bit more. I find the problem is we're going in and out of the worlds too much, and Amy Adams' world doesn't have anything to offer us. I'm done, if anybody cares.
I think I can agree that the book world is much more interesting, but I thought it was interesting learning about the deterioration of their relationship and just what happened between them. But yeah, no, like Michael Shannon's great. Aaron Taylor Johnson is great. I love that world. Like the tension when they get, when they first meet them, like on the roadside when they're doing the chicken race. You know what I mean? But I love that scene and I thought it was slow to get going, but once it got going, I loved it. But I didn't mind just getting the highlights because it's a long ass book. I don't think we can just stay in that world the whole time. But I think it would work as a solo movie. But I thought like just analyzing their relationship was interesting. But I agree that the look of the film is beautiful and it's interesting that he's not the costume designer. He wanted to be like, okay, no, I am a costume designer, but I'm just going to direct and I'm just going to.
Well, he must have some input. There's no way this guy, somebody gave him exactly what he would have designed. Yeah. And it looks like Tom Ford designed. So obviously the costume designers looked at his work and someone copied it.
Yeah, he must have had his say in it, but it wasn't specifically him. But no, I wanted a bit more of the ending, but it's very thought-provoking. And I dug that about it. So I don't know how I survived 4 years of this being out without hearing about that opening scene with just the dancing women.
I don't know how you missed it.
I have no idea.
Also, I'm done. When the trailer for this film first came out, I went out and read the novel that the movie is based on. I was kind of surprised to find that Amy Adams was hired to play the wife who received the book, because from what I remember in the actual novel, she doesn't really have a lot to do in the book. I thought she would be the wife in the novel, if you know what I'm saying. But having said that, I mean, I think she played her part really well. I think all the actors in this film were fantastic. But like Simon said too, the real star of the show here is Tom Ford. His not even just the stuff you think he would do well or know he would do well, like the art gallery. He also got the grime right, just like the gritty, grimy violentness of it. I think he got that right as well. This is definitely a movie I would recommend to people.
I would give it a mild not recommend.
Fair enough.
I didn't actually see it, so I can't offer an opinion. Sorry.
Perfect. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Be gone.
I think I'd give it a 7 if I got it in my head. I had to give it something.
So, Doug.
Yes, sir.
While you've been ever out shopping, I remember when you, post-COVID, when you actually went shopping, did you ever find any rare exports?
Sometimes in the Blu-ray section, yeah.
Well, that's nice to know.
Rare exports from Finland, directed by Jalmari Helander. I don't think anybody in North America would know these actors, but I thought it was interesting that the father and son in the film are played by Jorma Tamila and Oni Tamila, and they're actually father and son in real life.
Well, they look alike.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I'll kick this one off. This is not what I was expecting. I like Christmas horror movies. I don't I thought it would be a bit more like Krampus with just bringing the mythology into it. And there was mythology of just European, how they would do Santa Claus. And there's this big mountain and someone's fracking and like drilling into it to uncover some big secret about Christmas. And they find that secret, but we don't really learn about it until the end of the film. And I thought this was boring. There's just weird naked Santa Claus is chasing them, and I wanted to see the big huge Santa Claus, and we didn't see the big huge Santa Claus, and this one felt flat for me. And
I have to 100% disagree with you.
Sure.
I really like this film. I had no clue what was going on at all at any time. I really, really enjoyed this. I thought it was something different. I'm like, I've never seen this type of film. I have no clue what's going on with Glutenstein and Scoop-Dee and Scoop-Dee's buddy and Scoop-Dee-Doop's little brother. I have no idea. I love how the kid is the whole plot-driven focus. He's the smart one in the movie. They treat that kid like he's a moron, and he's the smartest in it. Because they show him at the beginning, they introduce him learning with the books. He figures everything out, and he goes exploring. And we go with him. And we actually like this kid because we think he's smart. Because his dad's a dick. His dad's friend's a dick. Glutenstein's a dick. And all his buddies are dicks. This is the only character we can like. And I like that the kid was smart enough, and they don't dwell on anything he does. He goes and looks at it, tells his dad. So we're learning at the same time that dad's learning. And constantly we're learning things. And I like how the film moves. It doesn't dwell on one thing. It moves constantly moving forward. Always moving forward. I really like this. I would actually recommend this. I love the end of this film. Really liked how they started figuring things out. I thought the end was genius. I'm not saying it's going to blow you out of the planet, but I think it's a solid watch. I'll disagree with you, Daniel.
Yeah, fair. I thought nothing happened.
Nothing happens. That's why the film is okay. Solidly okay. But for something different to watch, I think this is great. It's better than half the Netflix crap you guys make me watch.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like this. And I did enjoy the director's other film called Big Game. Samuel Jackson plays a president and the Air Force One gets hijacked. That one was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw a trailer for that the other day, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Looked good. I unfortunately did not see this film. I watched the trailer. It looked intriguing. The idea of Santa Claus being a horror character.
Oh, Santa Claus is vicious in this film.
Yeah. The trailer reminded me of The Thing a little bit. Like, what have we uncovered? And it's Santa Claus. And the hint of something being in the mountain. So I was intrigued enough to not watch it, but I didn't intend to watch it. But
I did like when the main guy that you think is going to be the savior of the film gets gunned down early. Just take it out off the aircraft. Gets out, boom, dead. I'm like, well, there goes that plot line.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm on Team Daniel on this one. I did not like this movie. It set itself up to be a horror film. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't scary. It wasn't bloody.
Nope.
It wasn't creepy.
Nope.
It had none of that.
Had Glutenstein and Sven.
It wasn't joyous enough to be a real Christmas movie for the whole family.
No, I would disagree
with you. It's just in this middle ground of blah, and I did not like it, would not recommend it. I say stay away.
I disagree. It is joyous.
Is it?
At the end, it's joyous. Absolutely it is.
Sure, like
when
the Polar
they enslave
Express.
A bunch of elves?
Yeah, man. Hey, it worked out for them. They got their 85,000 they needed.
Okay, that mailing them everywhere was cute. But I would rather just a movie about that, I think.
You know what? I have to disagree with you guys. I actually like this film. You guys hated it. I want that stated.
I honestly, looking at like the critics, what the critics thought, I think you're actually in the majority.
Yeah.
I thought I missed something, but I wanted more. I don't know.
You know what? Thank you guys. I enjoyed something for a change. Didn't love it. Enjoyed it.
I guess this didn't hit the targets.
No, it did not hit the targets.
I got one in. This is the directorial debut of Peter Bogdanovich.
But you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut, right?
What do you mean?
You got lucky.
Okay. With picking this movie or for doing that transition?
Bit of both.
Transition. Okay. Anyway, this is the first directorial debut. This is the directorial debut of Peter Bogdanovich from 1968, probably the oldest film I'll ever put on, starring Tim O'Kelly, Boris Karloff, Arthur Peterson, Peter Bogdanovich, and Nancy Shea, I think.
Hold on. Why did you put this movie on the list? Because this is not a Daniel Beck.
Oh, it's
not. Did your mom tell you about this?
No, honestly, I can't remember how I found it, but I found it like a month ago. You know what? I think when I put Severance on the horror list, and I think it was one of the recommended movies on IMDb. Because it's not horror, but I love...
That's a weird connection between Severance and this. There's not.
I mean, they both are both kind of most dangerous game premises, right? And
okay, I think, I can see that.
I think I picked this one because it might sound weird to say in just the gun violence in America, but I'm interested by mass shootings. And that's why I picked this one.
So am I.
I liked it for different reasons than I thought I would. Because I loved, I was surprised by the emotion of it. It was very intense. I liked the characters. And I didn't even mind that it didn't really get into the hook, what hooked me into the film, just the sniper aspect until like 30 minutes left. Because they set it up throughout the whole film, which was good. But I was really interested by that. This is just, or kind of semi-autobiographical, or biographical, just because it's a retrospective of Karloff's career and just him coming to terms with, oh, I'm not a big star anymore. And just the fact that this was, like, made a year before his death, I thought that was really, really interesting. And I would love to watch some of his movies and come back to this one because I thought that aspect was really cool.
Kevin?
Well, it is semi based on historical events too, because there was a university student, a University of Texas student that did very similar actions with a sniper rifle. And that's what it's loosely based on. I loved the context of classical horror versus modern horror horrific news. So, you know, by the time we get to the late 1960s, you know, the horrific person is your neighbor. He's potentially a serial killer or someone that's going to get unhinged. So a classical horror actor who's played monsters, real monsters on screen, feels that he's ineffective, that people aren't connecting with his work anymore. So I thought Karloff was great in the film. I enjoyed the film quite a bit. And I liked the bit at the end where he's like, basically he knocks out the kid and he's like, is this what I was afraid of? You know, is this it?
Yeah.
Is this what I think was actually trying to replace me? This is nothing, like punk. Basically, what a loser. Anyway, I thought it was very well done. Obviously, Peter Bogdanovich is a great director and has studied and talked to a lot of great directors and was learning a lot from them. So it was nice to see that a lot of that pays off in the shots and the look of the film. So,
Doug?
Yeah, I didn't want to like this movie because I think Peter Bogdanovich is kind of a jerk. but I ended up really loving this film. I thought it, like mentioned before, the parallels with Karloff and him retiring because he doesn't scare people anymore. I loved it. I thought really everything about movie was fantastic. It's probably my favorite movie we've had to watch this week.
Okay, I want to start that. I think this. I love Bogdanovich films. I think this film is something most filmmakers need to watch. He has a lot of moving parts at the beginning of this film. I mean, a lot of moving parts. We have a director. We have Bogdanovich. We don't even know who's going to show up. We have a screening room where Karloff walks out. We have the other guy buying bullets. And the thing just builds beautifully. It keeps gelling things together. And as we get closer and closer to the drive-in, we know what's going on as a viewer. But obviously Karloff doesn't know. And Bogdanovich doesn't know. And the film gives me, I even like the scene where we're waiting and the guy is on the, I don't know, like the grain roofs of some kind, taking people out in the highway. I thought it was just
water towers, right?
Was a beautiful shot.
I think it was gas.
Like, I love that shooting. And the guy coming up the stairs, he shot that perfectly. And the guy getting taken out, and I just love how the sniper was shooting people. And then you get the shot, and you see people going down. So he didn't even cut close shots of them. He's shooting it from up above constantly. I thought you won't see that nowadays.
Sorry, just to clarify, more... when we say shooting, you're talking about the camera, right?
Both.
No, he's shooting his gun.
The guy is shooting his gun and the shooting of the camera.
Just wanted to clarify. It had a very realistic look to it when he was doing that. Like, almost like you were a voyeur watching him shoot people on the highway.
And well, trivia with that, they didn't have permits to do that. So that was all done. They had stunt drivers driving in real traffic that they would walkie-talkie to and say, okay, you're getting shot now. And when they did, that was like one stunt driver with the other cars being real civilians.
Uh-huh. Brilliant. So that makes more sense, but I thought this looked really real. Now, when we got to the drive-in, I still love the shooting at the drive-in shots. They worked for me, too. When they couldn't find the sniper's just taking the projection out. People in their cars out. And this and that. I'm like, this is brilliant. And I like how he pacing of the film, because he knew what was going on, how long he needed to shoot it. And when Karloff shows up, and they have to wait for Bogdanovich to show up, that buys him 5 more minutes of shooting time with the shooter and building tension beautifully throughout that. Like, that build on this film is amazing. Mm. And I mean, I knew as Karloff leaves the car, you knew what was going to happen when they shot his assistant. So, I mean, we knew the end of the film, but I thought it worked so well. The cut to the screen, the cut to the guy, and merging the two worlds together at that point worked wonders for me. I mean, this just, Bogdanovich, every time I see one of his films, I'm impressed how he gets it. I don't see this anymore. I don't see this type of filmmaking, and I think there's so much to learn. Quentin probably watched Bogdanovich a ton now. The more I watch Bogdanovich, I see more Quentin in it. Do you know what I mean? When I watch a Quentin film, I see Bogdanovich all over it. And I've never seen that reference, ever. And I'm
And there are some parallels there, because both guys really built their career on studying film first.
Yes.
And then spinning into filmmaking. So, they studied the craft first.
So, did anybody buy anything? I know Kevin has. Anybody else?
I did not.
That's not one of his cars.
Not in front of me. I could go get a stack if you want, but...
what did I buy? I bought Pretty in Pink. I bought Flashdance. Rolling Stones concert film Shine a Light. Dustin Hoffman's Little Big Man. Somebody gave me a code for Megan Levy, which I don't think we've reviewed.
I think I saw that. Megan Levy.
It's a military story about a girl and her dog.
I did see it.
Okay, Mara.
Yeah. And then I upgraded some films to 4K on iTunes, the Back to the Future movies, Inception, Pacific Rim, Bourne Identity, and Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay. Well, I don't think I talked about these. I've had these for a while, but I don't think we've had time to talk about them on the show. So I'll hold them up. Just so if you're on video, you get to see them. If audio, you got to listen to me. I got Beautiful with Mimi Driver. I got Jack Nicholson, Three Shot with Little Shop of Horrors, The Terror, and Wild Ride, which is got tape on. It's weird. See, they put tape on this. You probably can't see it, but this is green tape. So it won't show up my green screen. So, but that's what it is to tell me that they've checked the disc. Paparazzi. I'm going to go through some of these. I'm going to go through them all. River King. I know. I'm becoming a big Ed Burns fan. I really think he uses his budget well in his films. I just finished Looking for Kitty the other day. The Squeeze with Karen Black and John Payne. See, whatever, they have these green stickers. And you guys must have seen House of the Dead, haven't you?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah, I'll pick that up. I'll do a few more. I'll do the World Apart with Barbara Hershey because I'm such a big Barbara Hershey fetish. Connor Kalika and the Wild Stallion. I'm like, this is a pickup if I've ever seen one. I've never heard of this movie, 13 Days with Kevin Costner. Anybody?
I have. It's about Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, and this is the last one. I picked up more, but this is the last one for Doug. William Powell and Carol Lombard for $1, Doug.
Nice.
Like, I thought that was a seal. And it's like sealed. And it's right here. I'm like, look at that. They don't make things like this anymore. Like, for $1. I'm like, thank you very much. Well, there will be more hopefully next episode because I bought a stack in this place. And if they make it,
we'll watch it.
Nice.
Maybe you'll buy it.